Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Regis Resources Limited conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Jim Beyer, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Harmony, and thanks everybody for joining us this morning. Regis is very pleased to announce that it's signed a conditional binding agreement with IGO to acquire its 30% interest in the Tropicana Gold Project. This will be with an effective date of the 31st of March, 2021, and for a cash consideration of 903 million. This is genuinely transformational, or this is a genuinely transformational transaction for Regis, and it's one that will deliver on our strategic objectives to grow as a safe, responsible, reliable, long-life, low-cost gold producer that generates strong financial returns. Tropicana is a low-cost, high-margin, top five producing Australian open pit and underground gold mine that's located in the Albany-Fraser Belt here in WA. It's one of the largest gold mines in Australia, with a gold production last financial year, FY 2020, of 563,000 ounces, and guidance for this financial year on 100% basis of 380,000-430,000 ounces. Now, the acquisition is subject to the waiver of a non-exercise for the rights of a preemption held by Anglo-Ashanti Australia. The 903 million dollar cash consideration payable for this will be funded through a combination of an equity raising of 650 million dollars, which will comprise of an institutional placement of 200 million and an accelerated non-replaceable entitlement offer of about 450 million, all fully underwritten by Bank of America. A new 300 million dollar secured syndicated term loan with a maturity date of 3 years has also been entered into with Bank of America. Now, the details of the funding and the other aspects of the equity raising are in the release. Pardon me. Now, this deal will deliver a well-established, long-life asset to the Regis portfolio. It's a Tier 1 asset. It's in a Tier 1 province. It has attributable reserves at 30% of 0.8 million ounces and resources of 2.3. The site has a history of reverse reserve replacement. It's got a growth profile outlook. It has an expected mine life of plus 10 years. Importantly for us, based on the detailed due diligence that we've done over the last number of months, we see great potential for further life extension at the mine beyond the current plans. We also see multiple near mine growth opportunities with attractive regional targets for longer-term upside as well. All of this with a world-class joint venture partner in AngloGold Ashanti. A proven gold miner with a successful track record of developing and operating Tropicana and other underground assets. We're looking forward to working with AngloGold at Tropicana for many years into the future. The acquisition of Tropicana, it's expected to create substantial value and provide Regis with multiple additional opportunities to deliver growth for Regis shareholders over the short, medium, and long term. At a more strategic corporate level, this acquisition will diversify Regis's existing production base with a high-quality, low-cost, high-margin gold asset. Critically, it provides us with additional immediate cash flow and a very limited cost associated with integration through the immediate bolt-on nature of this acquisition. This is a de-risked acquisition, and by that I mean there's no turnaround fix assumed. There's no fix-up requirements. It's a high-confidence, plug it in and play straight away. And more the point of play, get cash flow straight away. But this is de-risked. Further internal growth at the corporate level, further internal growth within Regis can be driven by cash flows. For example, with the current gold prices, we can fund the construction of the McPhillamys Gold Project out of the cash flows that we generate. Now, all of this sets the company up with an excellent cornerstone of a long life, reliable, low cost production machine that forms an excellent cornerstone for both internal growth, as I just mentioned, for example at McPhillamys, and also non-organic growth. So in summary, this is transformational. It'll deliver significant improvements to the company's resources, reserves. It increases our annual production across a greater diversification of sources, which helps de-risking. And as I mentioned before, it provides immediate additional cash flows. Now, all of this adds immediate strength to our business platform. And while at the same time, it also positions us for undertaking further organic and inorganic growth activities. So on that note, I'd like to pass it back to you, Harmony, and open everything up for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Nick Herbert from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Jim. A few morning. From me, please. Mike, to start with valuation, hoping you could outline some of the key assumptions you've made to get to that acquisition price, just thinking explicitly along the lines of mine life, resource conversion, what new underground developments you've featured in your plans. You've spoken to some of those near-term opportunities, but just trying to get a gauge on how much of that you've embedded in that number. Thanks.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's an excellent question, and obviously one question that we have to respect the JV nature of the operation, and any forward-looking commentary that we provide, certainly publicly. I guess more generally, we've certainly looked at the plans that do exist. You know, there was as I mentioned, a very extensive deep dive on the due diligence. We looked at both the underground opportunities and the plans, the current plans at the Boston Shaker underground, where we saw the resources projecting down, and what our and came to our conclusions, our own conclusions as to how confident we looked at that, and thought that where it's known. I mean, clearly, as we pointed out in our commentary, we think that there's a lot of, you know, across the board, underneath the pits, there's a lot of areas that are open at depth, including Boston Shaker. So they present opportunities that we were very optimistic about. And we also picked up information in our discussions on site that identified that there's some opportunities in there where additional value can be created and being considered, in addition to what Anglo are already planning for that site. So, you know, we then looked at, you know, we didn't make major assumptions on things like cost outs or the like, because, you know, we feel that from a, you know, an acquisition and valuation point of view, I think that's probably shaky grounds. We certainly looked as well at more broadly. So on that basis, we looked at both what the opportunities were to extend the existing open pits, where the down dip opportunities sat underground and underneath existing pits that hadn't yet really been looked at in as much detail as Boston Shaker, and saw potential opportunities there. And then, you know, stepping back more broadly, there's clearly near mine and in the region opportunities as well for quite a bit, I guess, further down the track to be able to add more life. You know, if you fundamentally look at the asset there, where value, there's value from its current production, which is clear and from our perspective quite well laid out as they're going through this recap phase. It's quite well publicised. Coming out of the back end of that, we'll see some improvements and growth in their production profile, and with that there'll be, you know, some, as you would anticipate, some commensurate reductions from the current quite high all-in sustaining associated with that growth phase that they're in. And we factored all of those in to our pricing and the value that we put on the table.
Okay, thanks for that. That's helpful. And then just in terms of how the process is run, Can you just talk to the engagement that you've had with the Anglo team and experience there? How much was just, you know, getting in and getting the data room information? How much was dealing with the executives there? And then also any indication in terms of the preemptive rights, noting that you'll assume here your preemptive rights for the remaining 70% stake, any discussions with Anglo around their appetite to be long-term holders in the asset, or is that something you view as an opportunity that's potentially coming up down the track?
Yeah, look, first off, on the DD front, I think through the whole process, there was a clear, an obligation to not get in contact directly with Anglo apart from the engagement on the site visit. Having said that, a lot of the information that we got through the DD process was, as you'd expect, was ultimately sourced, you know, requested through IGO and sourced from Anglo. Nothing that was requested that didn't come forward on that front. The site visit was our opportunity to engage directly with Anglo, and you know we were very comfortable with that. Yeah, obviously as part of our evaluation of the opportunity, you like to see. At the corporate level, I know some of the folks there and have known them for quite a while. But it was an opportunity for us to, check out the team on site, and we were quite impressed with what we saw and some of the people that we came across. And that also gave us a little bit of a more detailed insight into how the Anglo folks were thinking about the asset that, you know, clearly you can't get unless you're talking to people. We did have a subsequent to the site visit, we did have a follow-up tech meeting with Anglo here in Perth as well, as we dug into some of the detail around the geology, I think it was, and other aspects and geotech. So, in terms of engaging directly at a corporate level with Anglo, there wasn't any. You mentioned the preemptive right that comes with the reverse. We'd like to, that is certainly something that we value as part of being a signatory to the JVA. This is a great asset. I would imagine that it's something that Anglo feel is valuable. How long that stays, over time, corporate approaches and corporate strategies shift. And in the event that their current view shifted, then I'm sure we'd be more than willing to engage in that conversation, but it's certainly not part of our immediate thinking, and it hasn't been part of any conversation that we've had with Anglo corporately. As I said, we haven't had any engagement with them. In terms of the preempt, as I mentioned, the engagement is around this has really been directly with the vendor, with IGO, who have been in contact and liaising with Anglo through this process. And based on that and the feedback, we certainly are confident and believe that Anglo will pass on the preempt, but that's still out there.
Okay, thank you. And then just looking at, corporately from a group funding perspective, does it still have any implications for McPhillamys in that if McPhillamys were to get the green light, say in the next quarter, how would you think about funding that project? Would you have the capacity for that, or would that be something then that you'd look to potentially defer for a period?
No, we're always expecting whether people would say, does this mean you're walking away or you're giving up on McPhillamys, or you might not say that, but it's kind of what might be inferred. In fact, it's quite the opposite. The reason that we really like this deal and why it's such a good fit, as I mentioned before, this is a pure bolt-on. The integration requirements to add this component of Tropicana into our business You know, it is being managed. It's not the managing process. There isn't this, you know, cultural integration process and the systems and all of the rigmarole that goes with that for anybody that's been through that kind of process and merger. You know how difficult it can be and how it can really drain and consume management time. That doesn't exist here. And as I said before, it's not like this is a distressed asset that we have to turn around. It's working well. That's one of the reasons why we value it. You know, it's not as if it requires, you know, it's not a project that we're wandering into saying, oh, this is going to require 3 to 6 months of fix up and turnaround and then, you know, down the track find out it's actually going to take us 18 months to 2 years. We just plug it in. It immediately starts to generate cash flow. And from a McPhillamys perspective, you know, as McPhillamys is still working through its approvals process, the great thing about this is, you know, if the gold price stays where it is, it means that the funding question for how we fund McPhillamys is basically that question is just taken off the table completely because, we could fund that out of our cash flows. It's almost like it's a win-win. The first win is that we get the Tropicana, we get increased reserves, increased resources, increased production, increased cash flow, accretive NAV, and it also allows the smooth pickup or implementation of McPhillamys, which we think is just, you know, great.
Okay, thank you. And then finally, just help us on the modelling side. Might be one for John, but any implications we should be thinking about from a tax perspective and also stamp duty costs?
Okay, Nick. So in relation to stamp duty costs, I'd suggest the best way to deal with that is just to take the standard percentage. I think it's just over 5%, and that'll give you an indicative figure for stamp duty. In relation to taxation, you know, there's nothing really overly special to consider. You know, we've obviously done our modelling, but I don't think there's anything particular. There's nothing particularly unique that you need to consider, I don't think.
I think one of the strengths of the tax is that we can assimilate it in as a combined entity. So, if the gold price drops, for example, it gives us some opportunity to spread any tax losses that may occur in that scenario across the rest of our business.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Alex Barkley from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Jim and team. On IGO's recent reserve and resource statement, perhaps they didn't show so much of that underground opportunity that they've been developing and trying to sell, but obviously you were pretty confident. Just sort of how did you get comfortable with the likelihood of that future production? Was it drill holes or talking to the team on site or, you know, how did you get confident?
Oh, look, all of the above. You know, we got access to, as you would expect for an opportunity of this size and of this quantum, we really got into the nuts and bolts of the ore body modelling. We implemented a pretty significant due diligence process where we did our own mine designs to assess how it looked relative to what was being put forward and proposed, and we got very comfortable with that. We looked at the available data. We used our judgment. We talked to the people on site, and we came to our conclusion that we think that there's significant value there to be realised over time.
Yeah, okay. And you also said in all your conclusions, you said maybe you'd seen some opportunities in addition to what Anglo was thinking. Do you see any difficulty in maybe imparting that strategy upon Anglo if their vision for the site is a little bit different and you've maybe come up with a different areas of value for the mine? How do you think you can impart your valuation and vision going forward?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when, for those sorts of things, you know, we see that there's a very good, near to medium term and long term plan. Where the opportunity lies is out towards the back end, where we can look and see there's other opportunities that are yet to come forward on that conveyor belt of time horizon, I guess. You know, I draw on my experience of working in larger corporate organisations, you know, mining companies, and you know that there's always a good understanding of where the long-term future comes from. But because you've got such a great asset base in the business, you don't always, you don't spend a lot of time and effort looking at what might exist in 10 or 15 years' time, because you kind of know it intuitively, you know it from your business, but you don't have to go and, I don't know, I suppose shout it from the trees maybe is the wrong way to describe it. But as we look, we can see that I'm sure the confidence that that's at that back end of the existing plans, that it doesn't just drop off. There's plenty of opportunity to continue beyond what's already seen. It's that I'm talking about on that front, rather than sort of critiquing it and saying, we know boats is a better way of doing this. That's exactly not what I'm not saying. There's other experiences that we can bring in our, the way we run satellite pits at Duketon and an opportunity for information sharing for sure. But I'm not saying that on the suggestion that they aren't already thinking about it or weighing up all the different options. This is a large, smart organisation. And how we see that relationship going forward? Well, once we're able to engage, and there's a number of players and people in at the senior level and locally here that I know, and we will no doubt sit down and work together and constructively discuss the long-term plan, the plans for the business, and as long as we do it constructively, I'm sure our thoughts and ideas will be given the appropriate consideration as we work together.
Okay, and a final follow-up from me on that. I appreciate your hands are a little bit tied from the JV and the ongoing deal, but what sort of timeline do you see on some of that value of the underground mines and the pits and developing and being able to communicate that to the market?
I guess that is something that we'll end up sitting down and working through with Anglo when the time comes, and then working out what our communication plan will be around that.
All right, that's it from me. Thanks.
And just before we move on, I'll just make a further comment if I can about the stamp duty. So, Alex, if you look at page 22 of the investor pres, you'll see there that we've stated that stamp duty is $46 million. Which is roughly, as I said before, the price times a rate gives you that 46.
Okay, back to you. Thanks, Harmony.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matthew Frydman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thanks. Morning, Jim and team. Thanks for hosting the call. Couple of questions from me, if I can. Firstly, can you remind us what gold price you cut your existing reserves at and how that compares to your assumptions that underpin the transaction price on this deal? And then I guess the extension to that question then is around expected return on investment. I guess, conceptually, do you have a different approach to returns or hurdle rates from putting capital into an acquisition like Tropicana, a producing asset, compared to, say, a Greenfields project like McPhillamys or even putting capital to work at Duketon? I guess, do you have a lower hurdle rate or, a different implied gold price assumption on this transaction? And has that factored into the price that you're willing to pay?
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Good question. So on our resource and reserves, we do our resources at $2,000, that's Aussie an ounce. And the majority of our reserves are tested, and we use a $1,600 cutoff. The reason why I say the majority is that we'll usually have a few small pits, or, you know, where we look at and say, you know, if the gold price is $2,300 an ounce, say, and we've got a small pit to go and finish and take a goodbye cut or whatever it is that we're doing, and, you know, it might be worth $1,800 or $1,900 an ounce in cost, but the gold price is $2,300 and the time horizon is 12 months or less, you know, we'll chuck that in and go for it as well. So we do exercise a little bit of discretion on those, you know, on some, maybe some near-term ounces, but we're always pretty careful with that. The last thing we want to do is, you know, think we're doing the right thing and then gold price turn sort of exposes us to a P&L impact. In terms of the returns and the hurdles, look, I think you definitely would look at, I'm not going to go into the specific numbers, but if we looked at what we would be looking for on a return for, say, McPhillamys versus the returns on something like Tropicana, it is quite different in our, because there's quite a different risk profile. You know, even other acquisitions that we have looked at in the last 6 months, you know, you look at it, you go, all right, what's the risk? Is it front-end loaded, mid-loaded, back-end loaded? You know, and if you look at Tropicana, the risk is definitely not front-end loaded. You know, there's a clear plan, it's producing, it's got a history of performance. To a degree, you look at it and go, all right, well, you know you're going to get, what you were paying for. Where the risk starts to, and the questions that we look at and we start to factor the value, you know, the spreadsheet value down, is as you go back, all right, what's it look like in 8, 10, 12 years time in some of the modelling that we might be looking at? Yeah, well, maybe the bit further out that it is, that you might risk adjust that. But clearly that's, you know, you, in that scenario, you've got a lower return hurdle, because you've got much greater certainty and clarity in those early critical years. Flip to the other end of the spectrum, end is something like McPhillamys or any new project for that matter that requires construction, commissioning, ramp up. You've got construction timing risk, construction cost risk, you've got ore body reconciliation in the early days, you've got commissioning, you know, so for that reason you'd be looking at a different return on investment to make sure that you've got, I guess, the coverage to reflect the higher risk that you're taking. And similarly, if we're looking at M&A opportunities that, you know, it might be an operating asset, but it's struggling operationally. It looks good. You think that you can get in there and, you know, convince yourself that we're good at mining and we know what we're doing and perhaps the other party doesn't. I mean, that's not what you say, but that's an implied assumption. You know, that's got a risk about it as well, because you've got to be careful you don't get too cocky about your own abilities or more the point, you know, how much better than others that you are. So, and again, I'm not talking about Tropicana in this case. I'm talking about perhaps some other M&A opportunity that you might be looking at. So as we look at different scenarios, you know, there was very clearly with Tropicana the reason that we really like it, and we were, you know, we were comfortable in paying what we felt was a fair price. You know, to a large extent, certainly in the near term, it's de-risked. It's clear what's going on there. It adds to our reserves, it adds to our resources, it's immediate cash flow generation. And from a corporate perspective, being able to bolt that onto Regis, you know, we're now looking and saying, all right, this is 10 plus years. And, you know, we're getting 30% of the production on average. We might be looking at, you know, 150,000, 160,000 ounces per annum of that potential. Okay, that's a pretty good runway for us. Draw a little picture and down the track of a couple of years. We've got McPhillamys has worked its way through the approvals. We've managed to get the okay for that. We've built it. There's a 2 million ounce reserve producing somewhere between, you know, 160 to 200,000 ounces per annum, bang, put those two together, two significant producers of a, you know, good cost, good margin that run for 10 years. There's not too many businesses, not too many gold businesses in our space that sits with that type of portfolio. And that's not to discount Duketon. I mean, Duketon is a great asset, up there churning away, you know, spitting out its 350 to 400,000 ounces. We just think that by bringing Tropicana into our portfolio, even in the form that it's in, is just it just really transforms, we think, the way that we are able to look at our business. You know, as an MD, I can start to think, you know, what do we look like a few more years out? You know, we're not trying to scratch around and figure out where, you know, the ounces are going to come from in 4 or 5 years' time. We've got, you know, good margin production at Duketon, and we're not doing this because we think Duketon's got an end of a life. I mean, we have been talking about all the ground that we've picked up there and the exploration. So we really like it. This is by no ways a discounting the value of that. We think that's, you know, Rosemont's underground is really starting to come in. We've just kicked off Garden Well, so much more coming out of that. We just see that this really is, you know, super complementary to our business. And, you know, we look at our business differently, and we firmly believe that once it's in there, the market will look at our business in that way as well. It structures us differently. It means, you know, we've got a different life, different business, and a great platform for us to continue to grow both internally and external opportunities.
Sure. Thanks, Jim. You've segued quite nicely into my next question, which was really just rounding out that discussion on how the portfolio will look over time. You know, you've talked there about the potential for further inorganic growth. Do you think the portfolio would benefit further from, you know, additional de-risk bolt-on style acquisitions, you know, assuming this transaction is successful? Or does the cash flow from this acquisition, I guess, underpin an ability to take on additional early stage projects or more operational risk or turnaround risk where Regis can add value through that lens? I guess, you know, in what direction does this transaction allow you to develop the portfolio from here?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. And, you know, what we see it is it actually opens up all of the above, right? It doesn't exclude any of those. You know, we do, for example, look and think, all right, if we've got the construction of McPhillamys going on, do we want another construction project on at exactly the same time? Yeah, okay, well, you know, it's possible, but it's got an element of challenge about it. But in this scenario that we've got now, you know, any one of those scenarios that you described would certainly be something that we would, you know, have on our agenda to consider.
Sure, fantastic. Maybe one just finally, a bit of a more mechanical question, I guess, but assuming, let's assume that Anglo does exercise their right and chooses to chooses to buy the stake. And you know, you've completed the, you know, equity raising component. What's your sort of priority list for, you know, how you return those funds or how you utilise those funds?
Yeah, look, while that's something we obviously anticipate as low, we have given that clearly some thought, but. You know, at this point, we look at, you know, we've got a hedge book that, while we're managing, you know, it's viewed by quarters as being a bit problematic. We would certainly review how we might use some, you know, how we might deal with some of that hedge book or all of it. We'd certainly look at the options for using the funds for the construction of McPhillamys, given that, you know, we've got them. And then there's, you know, we'd look at it as well for other potential M&A opportunities, should they be of the right structure that's appropriate for that form of acquisition. And then finally, and this is not in any order of priority, And the final option is that also to look at all or a component of that back as a capital return to our shareholders.
Great, that's very helpful. Thanks very much, Jim.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Andrew Bowler from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
G'day, Jim and team. Actually, all my questions are answered on what would happen if Anglo did exercise its right and you had excess funds from capital raising. I guess the only question remaining from me is, what's written in the JV agreement about how long Anglo has to make a decision? I mean, you talk about breaking down, you know, two possible outcomes, whether it's, you know, pre-placement or pre-finalisation of the raising as a whole. Have they sort of got 2 weeks to look at this, or are you hoping that they'll come up with something in return? Cheers.
Under the terms of the agreement, they've got 60 days. But you know, we, on the basis of the conversations, it's not like this whole thing is a surprise. We would certainly hope that and anticipate that Anglo are able to make their assessment and respond pretty quickly. You know, it's clear the money's on the table, and we'd certainly be anticipating and hoping, I guess, that the response comes back. But the reality is the agreement allows for up to 60 days.
Thanks. And I guess a follow-up as well. You talked about, you know, potentially paying down hedge positions and utilising some of that equity you raised to fund McPhillamys. In terms of the hedge position pay down, are you sort of anticipating that could be something that if the deal does go through, that you would look at accelerating delivery into that hedge book? Or would you, you know, stay the course on current delivery rates? Cheers.
No, look, at the moment, we have assumed that we're just going to continue with our existing delivery rate of 80,000 a year. Now, obviously, once we're in and you know, everybody's got, you know, it's bedded down, we'd certainly be looking to have discussions around that. But that's our approach at the moment. You know, quite frankly, we just want to move the things on in a way that is manageable.
No worries. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Sam Berridge from Perennial. Please go ahead.
G'day, Jim. I think Nick mentioned possible timing of next quarter for the sort of final permitting and whatnot at McPhillamys, just for, you know, those of us that aren't up to date on that project and the sort of the, you know, the deadlines there. Just, you mind refreshing what the outlook there is in terms of you know, hurdles to FID?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we're working all of our engineering and the finalisation of our definitive feasibility study, the DFS. We're driving that to the basis that everything's ready to pull the trigger on, you know, early July. The reality of the permitting process is that you know, there's a lot of work, and you know, we're in regular consultation to the Department of Planning, Department of Planning, Infrastructure and Environment in New South Wales, and the DPI Planning. You know, there's really probably one key outstanding area around surface water licences, and we're just working our way through. With DPI, and DPI Water is working its way through the finalisation of how that's actually can be structured in a manner that works. We see a pathway through, but these things just take time. You know, they're obviously got to be assessed. We're pleased with the engagement and the very, very constructive discussions that we're having. It's really just a case of sitting now and letting the, you know, nothing's ever certain, that's for sure, but our confidence is strong, but in the end, we'll get it when we get it, and you know, we can never be 1,000% certain until you've got it in your hand. But our you know, we're still pushing along with a high degree of confidence on this project. You know, there's nothing really that's changed to suggest anything otherwise. It's just the timing continues to be a timing factor for us.
No worries. Yep. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Peter O'Connor from Shaw and Partners. Please go ahead.
Hey, Jim, John, thanks for the call. Congratulations.
Thanks, Peter.
Jim, page 29, just jumping around a bit, your quarter three update and guidance, you're a tad light run rate at the end of quarter three.
Yeah.
Just thoughts going into quarter four. I know you've got some key deliverables you've outlined, but not a lot short, but can you get there? Will you get there? Risk?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, Peter, and it's... I haven't got the page with me. I can't find it. Did you say page 23?
29.
Oh, 29. Sorry. Yeah. That explains why I can't find it. Yes, look, it's certainly with our production, and given where we are in the month, we haven't been able, we haven't finalised our costings, but as the accounts are still settled. But, you know, you can see that Q3 was 86. We certainly saw an improvement. And, you know, the key factors for us coming in on guidance is the performance of the main zone at Rosemont. There is some, yeah, we've driven our way there through the year. We got there earlier this year. We've done extensive grade control drilling to give us the confidence that, you know, we know that it's going to, because it's such a key point, you know, it's this, unfortunately, the ounces that we get from the underground are not at the beginning of the year, but they're at the end of the year. So we're sort of in that stage where if a fan breaks and we're down for 2 weeks or, you know, something like that, it really has an impact, which is why we've just sort of highlighted that the, you know, when you're pulling dirt out at 8 to 10 grams a tonne as we are in some of the stopes that we're just kicking off, you don't have to be delayed in June by much before you see it sort of following through. So we did want to highlight that, those risks. Having said that, you know, Q3 was light. We had the slip in Garden Well main pit, which required a lot of jiggery-pokery to remove around our production sources. We sort of worked through that, so there's a bit more confidence in that. The Rosemont, coming back to the Rosemont underground, I don't have the figures right in front of me, but from memory I think the underground was contributing something to the overall production of the at Rosemont of the order of, you know, 20 or 30%, but in March we saw that step up as reflective of the grade to more like 60 or 70%. So that's sort of giving us comfort that the ounces are really starting to come out from the high grade, which is clearly what we need to be able to come into the guidance. You know, if we're looking at the range of 355 to 380, certainly, you know, the everything needs to come home with a wet sheet to sort of come above that midpoint. The way that we see everything performing now, we're certainly comfortable that we'd be sitting within that range. But there's a few things that have got to go right for us. So we just wanted to make sure that people understood those things. We believe that we are set up for that. We're not highlighting these because we already know that they're a problem. We don't. We think we're on top of them. But they're just the key deliverables we thought were worth highlighting.
Okay, thanks. And
of course, the production profile is a key element of how the unit cost goes. So the two are... Even though while we haven't got it here, as you guys know, you don't have to be Einstein to figure out the relationship between unit costs and production.
Thank you. And hedging, I know you answered this before, but this asset comes unencumbered by any hedging from IGA that was in their corporate vehicle, is that right?
That's correct. No hedging, no debt.
And just philosophically, being able to spread your hedge book over more ounces is a good thing?
That's right. We think it... Oh, John, you want to talk to that?
Yeah, so at the moment, obviously, the hedging that we've got Peter, is only over the Duketon reserves. It completely ignores the 2 million ounces of reserves we've got at McPhillamys, and obviously it completely ignores anything over Tropicana. So what the Tropicana acquisition does and what the McPhillamys project does is, you know, provide a very significant number of additional reserves to spread those hedges over, if that's what we chose to do.
So does that mean dilution of the 80,000 ounces a year? What do you mean by that?
So at the moment, as Jim mentioned earlier, the plan is to continue to sell into 80,000 ounces a year because, you know, we're pretty keen to lower those number of hedges and just get rid of them. They're a bit of a legacy issue that we are dealing with and getting rid of. We've got, you know, at this point, that's the strategy that we're going to continue to execute.
Got it. And Jim, when you were preparing your pitch to put in your final bid in late March, and you're trying to think about what will the Independence Group board and management team look at when they're reviewing these, was it just about price? So if I had a bid 902, I would have got it. Or was it about corporate governance, about fit? Was it about operatorship, stewardship, ESG? Was the package you put to them broader than just the dollar number?
Oh, Peter, I think it was all based on good looks of the management team. which is why...
Lucky we're on a conference call without Zoom.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised we got to where we are. Speaking for myself, not the other handsome folks around the table. We knew that... Well, at the end of the day, you know, there's a driver for, IGO have got an agenda and what they're pursuing, but also, you know, they've clearly got to be comfortable that the counterparty that they're potentially dealing with is, it's got the capacity to deliver what they're promising in terms of value. So I'm sure that there was a part of that in the discussions that, and how they looked at it. And the certainty of delivery and you know, the risks around that, I can't speak any more for what they would have been thinking. I mean, I know if I was on their board, that's what I'd be looking at, value and the certainty of that value being delivered.
Okay. And in terms of value, if I was to say based on market numbers, your PNAV is about 0.7 times, give or take. That's Regis Corporate. And it looks like you paid fairish value for this deal. So, and you're using paper partly to bid for this, which would look to be dilutive. Just thoughts on your overall funding strategy. Could you have used more debt, or was your limit 300? And how did you come up with that 600-300 split?
Yeah, look, originally, back at the end of last year, we were looking at it from a pure equity point of view. But as share prices came off, we obviously started to see that on some elements, it was diluted. I mean, from an NAV point of view, it's not diluted. It adds cash flow, it adds reserves, it adds resources. It gives us. It really is. As I mentioned before, we're not trying to suggest that this is just a strategic investment that, you know, doesn't really do anything in terms of cash flows or the like, which, you know, over my life I've seen that. We looked at this and we believe, you know, we felt it's a fair price, but we see that it delivers, it's accretive NAV, it adds to our, as I was talking about before, it adds to our reserves base, adds to our resource base, adds to our cash flows. Importantly, it gives a time horizon for reserves and resource, a time horizon for reserves and for production that we just don't currently have running. You know, we have a decent time horizon with McPhillamys, but we haven't got that running yet. So there's a real value to that in terms of how that sets us up, how we're able to be number one viewed, but more importantly, how we can take, you know, more decisions on corporate opportunities by knowing that we've got a much longer certain time horizon for production and cash flows. The decision on the debt to equity, as I said, it was as everybody did over the last few months with the softening of gold equity prices. We felt that rather, you know, that we needed to put in something that limited the that dilutionary effect, and so we went for the debt. And then really we had to go through a balance between, well, we're happy to take on debt, but we really don't want to, we don't want to fund it too much with debt, because you know, then you've got a millstone of a massive amount of debt around you, and you know, this is, this then becomes a question of managing business risk. You know, you go into debt for the whole thing, and you know, you get a you know, not a black swan event, but you know, a sense of karma lands across the world, and the gold price softens, which we don't believe will happen. But you know, and the gold price drops, and suddenly you're starting to struggle with this, with this massive debt. So we worked on it, and we came up with what we thought was the right balance there between you know, working to protect the existing shareholders, but and while at the same time not putting our balance sheet overly at risk.
Jim, are you required to add hedging around this debt? Is it part of a debt facility? Okay.
No.
Hey, fine. Can I switch gears? Just trying to get a sense for the answers you've given before. It seems to be a case of resource arbitrage, in effect, what you're doing. You see more than somebody else. So in that respect, and given this is a new province compared to a lot of other places in WA, how do I think about the size of the camp at Tropicana? You know, we talk about camp sizes elsewhere as, you know, being substantially larger than meets the eye. Is currently, given the mining so far and the resource outlined, what is it, about a 7 million ounce camp? This type of resource, you know, do you have a sense for what size similar camps could be, or thoughts on that? And is that what's part behind this resource arbitrage view you've got?
I mean, I don't know how many times I've asked the exploration geologist to tell me what the different reserve production is on a square kilometre basis for all the different greenstone belts around the place, so that you can sort of draw the extended, extrapolated, interpolated, postulated relationships between, you know, acreage and how many gold ounces you might produce. And every time I ask for it, I get a different answer. But it's always got good coloured pencils with it. So the short answer is, mate, that's a good esoterical question to ask, and I can't give you anything more than a good esoterical answer. You know, as you say, it's a new province. It's pretty spectacular what the guys have found so far. Is it the only thing there? I don't know, but I'd be a betting man to say it probably isn't.
Okay. And my last one, under IGO last call, they talked about the catalysts at Tropicana for the year ahead, and the key one was the Havana PFS, which was due sometime during calendar 21, although they said there'd be news flow along the way. Is that kind of the key milestone we should be looking out for coming out of Tropicana over under your stewardship over the next 9 months?
Look, I'm going to pause it there. I think we're getting into too much detail on the future, and you know, we need to get a little bit more established with our relationship and discussions before I go making any public comments to that level of detail.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. We now have a follow-up question from Matthew Frydman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Sure, thanks very much. Just a couple of quick follow-ups if I can. You've obviously, you know, outlined conceptually at least, you know, where you expect to see upside over time at Tropicana. Maybe drilling into specifics a little bit more, can you talk to, in your, you know, in arriving at the transaction price, did you build any resource to reserve conversion into your base case, you know, based on, I guess, the, you know, the known deposit? And then secondly, you've just kind of expanded a little bit on your view on the district potential. We know that developing satellite pits, you know, feeding those into established infrastructure, that's really bread and butter for Regis. So do you think that, I guess, you know, do you see that as an opportunity in your view? Regionally, do you think that the regional exploration budget as it stands is sufficient? And, you know, similarly, did you ascribe any value to that in arriving at the transaction price?
Look, in the same way that I just said to Peter, there's some elements here that I'm really not at this point prepared to get into the detail on. Yes, we did make some assumptions on the successful ongoing conversions and those sort of things. Of course we did, and I'd be surprised if anybody didn't. That's the whole opportunity here. The opportunities that you talked about are certainly things that we would like to think that some experience that we bring. And as I said before, I don't say that from a perspective that I'm sure they haven't already been thinking about, they being Anglo, haven't already been thinking about that. It's just that, we can give some, experience on, what works and what doesn't work, and that's one of the things that we bring to the table. And that's probably, really broadly, Matt, as much as I'm happy to say at this point in time.
Yeah, no problems. I understand. Thanks very much for the follow-up, Jim.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. We now have a follow-up question from Peter O'Connor from Shaw and Partners. Please go ahead.
John, page 22 on the debt. You talk about the term sheet and the key terms around the facility. So the term sheet for debt, it's a $300 mil facility over 3 years. Is that a bullet payment, or does it amortise equally over 3 years? Any thoughts on that, and any indication of what sort of rate or coupon that's measured off?
Yeah, look, Peter, it is a bullet over 3 years, but as to the commercial terms of the debt, I don't think it's appropriate to go into that.
Yeah. And I think, Peter, if you've got any more details that you'd really like to follow up, we're sort of more than happy to take the conversation offline and help fill in what we're comfortable filling in. Definitely. I'm just conscious of everybody's time.
I appreciate your time today, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pete. And I appreciate your email from earlier, and so we'd be more than happy to help you get a better understanding of us if you're coming in on coverage. Okay, Harmony, is there any more, or are we at a point where we can wrap it up?
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to yourself for closing remarks.
Okay, thanks very much, everybody. I just reiterate that we really do see this as transformational. I won't go through the reasons again. It's certainly an exciting time for us. And we just see this as, with the profile at Duketon, which we really like and love as part of our business, the excitement and the potential in McPhillamys as we work our way through permitting there, and having this immediate bolt-on opportunity is just a great addition for us, and we're looking forward to that. So thanks everyone for joining us, and as always, if anybody has any follow-up questions, please feel free to get in touch. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.